Okay, so this is another interview. This is Jenny Johnson Riley from the Alumni Board, and I am here at Pacific University's homecoming in 2024, and we are interviewing Donna Maxey Easter. Donna, can you tell us graduated and then your program of study?
My name's Donna Maxey Easter. I graduated in 1970, and in May. And my field of study was elementary education.
Okay. And then did you go on to become a teacher?
I did. Forever, seems like.
Yep.
So, I have vivid memories of a Pacific. I especially have vivid memories of my freshman year. I remember it was warm, and they had the first, you know, all the freshmen were out in the quad. There was Mac Hall and Walter Hall, and I came down wearing a dorm shirt.
Oh, nice.
And so the dorm shirt was about this length, which was like right to your knees, mm-hmm. and there was a slit like to here.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, like mid-thigh, at that time I was quite something.
Oh,
and I had nothing on under it, but, you know, I had my underclothes, but
right.
but I didn't have on pants, and I think I came down barefooted or something, and I think I caused quite a stir. Quite a stir, you know, and then there was one guy, Woody Koenig, was going here. We had gone to high school together. Woody was white. I'm African American. So, and Woody was white, and so, you know, we were like, hey, I didn't know you were coming, you know, and we were all excited to see each other and everything, and so, and that's the first day that I met Opal Chancellor.
Oh, okay.
And she thought, who is this? Just like this. So, I mean, my whole freshman year was kind of like that. Mm-hmm. When I was in high school, I was very popular. I was hyperactive in social service stuff and student government and all of those things. And so when I came to Pacific, I became freshman class secretary. I was just telling Patrice that I hadn't had a whole, we had a thing that OEFI was doing, OEFI Sweetheart. And we hadn't been in school even a month, and they expected each class and each sorority to have someone that they submit for this contest. And we're like, who can we do this? You know, like, who do we know? And it's a talent contest. So it's like, well, what do we know what to do? And I'm like, well, I just had a senior recital. I had taken piano lessons since I was in third grade, and I was taking lessons here and being a music minor. And so I said, well, I could play, you know, Claire de Lune or something. You know, I just had a recital. I've got several I could pick from, so they listened to it. I said, but I don't have a dress. So I think her name was Diana Matsui, had a dress, so she loaned me a dress, and somebody else loaned me some shoes, and they put makeup on me because I didn't know how to do that. And somebody combed my hair, and off I went, and I won. And it was a shock for a lot of reasons. Number one, because I was black and everybody else was white. Giselle Nespickel was the junior candidate, and Giselle did the hula, and she was big, tall, blonde, very curvaceous and everything, and it's like, I'm not going to win this one.
Right.
What I won, why, I don't know, but the faculty voted.
Oh.
The faculty voted, so, you know, the guys were very polite. But after that, every court that there was, then for whatever reason, OEFI put my name up to be on the court and represent them. So, I mean, I don't think there were any courts my senior year, but I remember there was a Blue Key court, and then I was on, I was also on Homecoming Court, and two or three other things that, you know, OEFI, and everybody got to the point, people were like, well, is OEFI sponsoring you? I'm like, I don't know anything. Like, okay, well, you know, pretty soon somebody from OEFI would say, well, of course we're going to sponsor you. Like, oh, I don't know.
Right.
But for whatever reason, I was theirs. So anyway, yeah, that was kind of exciting, and I was coming into the library here was funny because I got I'll start with classes first. So Dr. Prince, Dr. Stephen Prince, was my English professor, and he was just amazing. He had such elan. He had such class and grace. And I remember the first class that we had, and I was so intimidated because, you know, having come from Portland and gone to Jefferson High School, which is primarily the African-American high school, you know, you hear all these things that you have a lesser education, mm-hmm. and you're not going to be qualified, and you're only a affirmative action recruit, and blah, blah, blah. And so I get in this class, and I'm like, I'm just terrified. You know, am I going to be able to keep up? And, I mean, I know I'm not stupid, but, you know, if you come from a school that is... I was on college track in high school, but if you come, as opposed to kids who come from higher income families, and the summer before, was it the summer? Yeah, I think it was the summer before I came here, I had done an internship, I guess it was an internship, with Catlin Gable, which is a private school in Portland, private school in Portland,
yep.
And so they were trying, it was my after my junior year. They wanted me to go to Catlin Gable, and it's like, no, I might be on, you know, I might be Rose Festival princess or something, and you know, because we're going to have court, and I don't want to miss out on that opportunity. So I didn't want to go to Catlin Gable, but they were trying to integrate, and it's like, nah, I'm not doing it. But anyway, so I kept up with the Catlin Gable kids pretty good, but it was still a little intimidating because they were older than I was, and they were more sophisticated. They had more, they had more sophistication. You know, having traveled more places in the world and stuff. I mean, everything that there was to offer in Portland, plays and different ballets, all that stuff. I got to go to those things. But as far as traveling places, I didn't have that kind of experience. So anyway, so we were in our class, and everybody had to read this book. And it was, I think it was the something of the Cave Bear or something.
Clan of the Cave Bear,
Clan
maybe?
Of the Cave mm-hmm. Bear, I think it was. She had just, what's her name?
I can't think of her name, but she's here from Oregon. Jean Owl, maybe?
Yes, I think that was. And I think she might have gone to Pacific.
Maybe, yeah.
I think so, but so everybody had to buy the book. They were trying to help her sales, you know. And so we get to class, and the first day of class, I'm like asking, and I said, you know, I'm reading the book, and there's this word, and I don't know what it means, and I asked my parents, I looked in the dictionary, asked my brothers and sisters, and nobody knew what this word meant, and so let me see, what is it? And I said, I circled it up here, so I looked and I found it, and I go, oh, here it is, frigging, what does that mean? And Dr. Prince looks very distinguished and says, frigging means fucking. I'm like,
sorry.
I was so embarrassed. I mean, I just dropped my head on the table. I just, you know, like, oh my God, I couldn't, first of all, I don't think I'd heard an adult say that word before.
Yep.
And especially not a distinguished adult, you know. And I was like, oh my gosh, okay, all right, okay, what else is coming? I mean, and so we're talking about the book. I mean, I was very naive, very protected, very sheltered, very naive. You know, they talk about kids who come from the inner city. Mm-hmm. No, a lot of them are very sheltered. And in fact, Brian said something last night to me about his relationship. And, you know, I thought that he was quite the Lothario.
Yeah.
And works out, he was just a lot of swag. You know,
yep.
Not having experience, not doing any of the things that you thought. But, you know, there's the persona. Mm-hmm. And then there was me who came in. And every class, you know, we're studying the Greeks and the Romans, and they're all about sex.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew nothing about sex, not from a practical point of view. So every class, I mean, I knew how babies were born when I was 4 years old. I mean, I could take you through the birth cycle and all that stuff. But in terms of practical advice, I had none. And so every time they bring up something, this was a, a phallic symbol or this or that, I'm asking questions, like, all the time. And so, and then, you know, years later, I invited Dr. Prince. I got married when I was 40, remarried when I was 40, and I invited him to my wedding, and he wasn't able to make it, but we did meet up, and he gave me this beautiful Pendleton blanket as a gift. And so he made the comment to me, he goes, I remember you were quite promiscuous as if when you were in college. I go, no, I was not at all. Well, you know, I remember you talked a lot about sex. And I said, that's because I didn't know anything. and I remember a guy who was in our class had said he had been in the Bill, what was Bill's last name? Bill something. He was a grown man. He was 22. He might have been 24. Really grown. And so Bill would try and take me after class and explain things to me. And you know, it's like, he goes, God, you don't know anything, do you? And I'm like, well, yeah, I know this and this and this. And like, no, you don't quite understand. So, you know, so freshman year it was like that. Sophomore year it was like that. Junior year, it was like that. And finally, my senior year, I remember this girl named Sue Short said, you know, you used to talk about sex all the time in the classes. You did it freshman year, sophomore year, junior year. And it finally dawned on me, you didn't know anything. I said, you're right, I didn't. She goes, how could you be so stupid? And I'm like, I didn't have any of that kind of experience. And boys were not coming at me like that. Because as I was saying to you, Patrice, my dad, you didn't mess with Mr. Maxey's daughters.
Exactly.
So, no, nobody was going to try anything, you know. As the boys used to tease me, if I take you on a date, are you going to shake my hand at the door? I said, well, I might give you a hug. I might give you a hug, but don't count on nothing else. But college was eye-opening to the world, and that there was just this whole, I don't know, I just didn't know. I just was so sheltered and inexperienced, and I had a lot of understanding of people because I had worked in the public since I was 10 years old. But I didn't have real life experience like that.
Okay.
So, and I grew up in a grocery store working, and so I had a lot of, I was outgoing and friendly and all of that. And so coming into the library was quite the experience because I got fired from working in the library.
What?
I got fired because I was too friendly. And I talked to too many people, and then they come to the desk, and then we'd start laughing, and then we were making noise, and you know they couldn't say that I didn't do my job because I was really good at doing my job. Mm-hmm. Everything that was supposed to be done, I did it on time. But I was, you know, I was like, hey, there's something wrong. Like lots of this kind of stuff, and
yep.
So I got fired, and. It was my senior year that I took a class from the head librarian. It was children's literature for elementary ed majors. And so I took the class, and after about a month of being in the class, the professor came up to me, and he was sweating, and I thought, what in the world is he getting ready to say? And he apologized to me. He said, I want to apologize to you because I thought that you were just kind of a dizzy blonde. And because you're always laughing and talking to all the people and so social and blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. But you're really intelligent and you have deep insights into the literature, and your writing is beautiful, and you da-da-da-da, you know, and all of these kind of things. And I'm like, thank you. But he says, and I want to apologize because I learned a lesson from this, that I should not judge people before I really know them. And it's like, yeah, I was doing all those things, but I'm still studying too. But studying was also my freshman year. I had not really studied in high school. I did a lot of studying outside the door. I wrote my papers, read the books, all that kind of stuff. But so I got on one, we were on Walter Hall. If you're looking at Walter Hall, we were on the right side of the front door on second floor. And there were five rooms over there. And we did most of the dating of the freshman class. I mean, we were comparing notes. Well, who'd you go to breakfast with? Well, I went to breakfast with so-and-so. Well, and then I went to lunch with such-and-such, and then I went to dinner with so-and-so. And, I mean, we were all just dating, you know. Mm-hmm. We're all kind of cute girls and smart and doing our thing, you know. And so we were just very social. And then it came midterms, mm-hmm. and I was taking five classes. I had three D's and two F's. And I thought, my parents are going to kill me. I'm on financial aid. But my parents are going to kill me. And I thought, so I went to these two girls. I remember it was Elizabeth and Nancy, who lived down the hall, and like, and they had straight A's. They were obnoxious. Opal was smart like that, too. But you know, I said something about, but Elizabeth and Nancy lived close to me, and Opal lived in another wing of the building. So like, okay, you guys, we're all taking the same classes, because Opal was a secondary ed major. And so they were elementary ed majors, too. So I was like, okay, I need help. I need to learn how to study. So whatever you do, I'm going to do it. So I hung out with them and took the notes and came back and learned how to, you know, study afterwards and all of these things, and, you know, taking the notes and how you studied for the test. And by the end of the semester, I'd brought it up to three B's and two C's. Okay. So, yeah, in a month and a half, I had done some work. Mm-hmm. I had done some work. But biology was still kicking my butt. So we get to biology. We had Doc Roberts. I think they named something after Doc Roberts down there at the biology building or something. Anyway, he was great, and he was terrifying. And I was like, you know, like, oh, Dr. Roberts, I'm flunking, and can I come? And so he would let me come to class early and talk to him, and, you know, and he'd help me, and I was trying to understand stuff. And so there was this guy named Bill. I can't remember Bill's last name, but Bill was very bright, too, and Opal was in the class, and so we had the frogs the first quarter, mm-hmm. and I took the frog and was throwing everything away. I'd never cut anything before, you know. Oh, look at this. This looks like junk in here. I threw all the eggs away and something else. I mean, I was just truly an F, truly an F. So the second half of first semester was the rats. And so I was determined I was going to do this. And so Bill and I were working together. And so he got a rat, and I got a rat. And I'm looking at Bill's rat, and I'm looking at my rat, and I'm like, these rats aren't the same. And so he liked that. I got to go get a new rat. I don't have the same kind of rat Bill has. So I'm getting ready to go get a rat. And Bill is looking at Opal. Opal. And so Opal's looking at me, and she's, come here, Opal. So Opal comes over and looks at the rat, and I tell her, I said, I'm going to get a new rat. She goes, Donna, don't go get her a new rat. I was like, this rat is not the same as Bill's. And she's like, that's because Bill has a male rat and you have a female rat. And I'm like, what? What do you mean? That's like, I had no clue. I was just like, so anyway, Bill was about as red as that exit sign, you know, by that time. You know, it's like, but what is this thing back here? What is all this? I just had no clue. No clue. And so, but we made it through. And I did good, and by the beginning of sophomore year, I made it into the Honor Society.
Oh, good.
So I was a boxerette. Okay. That was my goal. So Opal was the only black boxerette, and I said, we need at least one more.
What was a boxerette?
That was the underclass women's honor society.
Okay.
I thought it was too much for me to try to go for the regular honor society. By that time I had a boyfriend, and I was still doing the social thing, and I had 3 or 4 jobs every semester, so I was like, nah, that's too much. I couldn't do it. So I could have done it, but I didn't. But anyway, so yeah, it was all very interesting. Life was just a total exploration into things that I knew nothing about.
Yes.
And I was determined that my daughter would not be that stupid. So, you know, or as my older sister said to me, how did you get so dumb? How come you don't know anything? I was like, I don't know. She goes, you know, if I have a daughter and she's as dumb as you, I'm going to kill her. I'm just like, it's not my fault, you know. It's like, I'm doing the best I can. But, I mean, it was just a growing up and a maturing and learning about things. And, you know, I heard one of the men last night speak about Dr. McVicker, who was very, very sharp. He was the head of the education department, a very slightly built man, and he held his pencil. And it was just the way, it was very classy. And he always dressed impeccably, just impeccably dressed, and very proper English and everything. I mean, I had some great professors, and it was an amazing time. And I thought I got an okay education at Pacific. And when I left and started teaching, I realized I got an excellent education. I was much more prepared for teaching than a lot of my colleagues were. And I started teaching in California, and I was, you know, kind of intimidated by that because, you know, California was supposed to be the educational place at the time. So I got down there, and I thought, well, I know more than I think I do. Mm-hmm. Although I was a little disconcerting because I taught at Harvey Scott for student teaching. And I think there were 4 kids who were not reading at grade level in 3rd grade out of like 3 or 4 classrooms maybe. So when I got to the rural community of Oroville that I was teaching in that had 7,000 people in the town, and I was the most educated black woman in town, and I married my college sweetheart who was Steve Pomerantz, who was white and Jewish. So we were quite scandalous, needless to say, in that community. And we were kind of scandalous here at Pacific, too. There were people who were not prepared for that. A lot of black guys who were dating black white women, white girls, secretly, a lot of it. But Steve and I were real sweethearts. And so that was kind of disconcerting to a lot of people. You know, it's like, it's okay if you're just slumming, but if, you know, if this is for real, this is serious. I mean, the faculty was in an uproar about it, too, because Steve had a cousin, Dr. Al Friedman, who was in the music department, so we got to hear the scuttlebutt through the vine about it. So, but we got married anyway, and our relationship lasted 10 years, so... but anyway, and now he's Dr. Pomerantz. So, anyway. And so what else happened? I found that I was very prepared to be a teacher. I mean, I didn't know how to deal with having so many children. I had, you know, at that time you had 30 kids in a classroom. And I was teaching 2nd grade. And I had all of these kids that were below grade level. I think there was 1 or 2 that were on grade level. It's like, oh my gosh, what do I do? How do I do this? So I went to the principal after I'd been teaching about a month and said, I think you made a mistake hiring me. He goes, what? I said, I'm not prepared to do this. I think you made a mistake, and I'm not doing a good job. And he goes, you just started. You shouldn't expect to do a good job until you've been here 5 years. I'm like, what? He says, yeah, it'll take you some time, but we're going to get you some help. And so he got the first grade teacher to show me, and I mean, it was a whole new learning experience of how to work with remedial students, and plus we were in a very poor school district too. So, I learned so many things in teaching, but Pacific gave me a great foundation for being out there in the work world. So, let's see, what else can I say? Dr. King was killed my junior year. That was a big scuttlebutt. That was the year the BSU was started, about the time it was started, and the question was who was supposed to be in the BSU. Steve and I were clearly a couple. We'd been together, year and a half by this time, and so I, in my zeal and such and naivete, I was thought that he should be part of the BSU also. So, I ended up, I didn't really join the BSU. I mean, I kind of did, but not really. Mm-hmm. And, I would go to the meetings, but it was like half-hearted kind of thing, and plus, we were looking at the world to be integrated as opposed to here, this was doing what white folks were doing, which was being segregated. And now that I see it, now I've had some life experience, I see it a different way. Mm-hmm. But I think you need to have allies. They call them allies. I don't like the word ally. I like co-conspirator. That says more of a commitment to the cause. So allies are kind of over on the side and, they're not really involved. No, I want you all the way in the conspiracy so that we can work through this. But it was really difficult. It was really, heartbreaking time. And plus we had the Vietnam War and Reagan had been voted in and all these crazy things going on at the same time. My senior year, we had a Vietnam War protest, and all the students protested and marched and everything. And so I was the only student of the student teachers who didn't go to class that day. Mm-hmm. So I had to tell my students, according to my professor, that I was abandoning my post. And I'm like, well, what am I? Am I a student or am I a teacher? Because mm-hmm. if I'm a teacher, I need to be getting paid. And I'm not getting paid for this. But I was told that none of the students would be reprimanded or for being a part of the march. So I said, bump it, I'm going anyway. So I participated. But it was written in my professional file that I did not come to work that day. Mm-hmm. I was the only student at the college that got punished mm-hmm. for being in the protest. And I took it to the president, and he's like, well, I'm really sorry. Can't do anything about it. But, it's like, no, this isn't right. Mm-hmm. It was said that nothing was done. Well, I can't stop your people, the professors and stuff. And it's like, oh, really?
Right.
So it's like, okay. So when I was concerned that I was going to be blackballed from getting a job. But, excuse me. But I did, interview, and when I interviewed people, I said, this is what's in my professional file. Before you look, I want you to know that this is what's going to be in there. So they were, it's like, hey, not a deal. Not a deal at all. So that was some of what went on, and excuse me. Pacific was interesting. It wasn't, you know, Brian mentioned last night about all the jobs he had. Mm-hmm. I mentioned I had started working at 10. I had a half-time job. My folks had a mom, pop, and the kids' grocery store. So the working wasn't that hard for me. Having, you know, the discipline to do the work and do all that kind of stuff. But I had 99 jobs, you know. I worked in the kitchen, and they could always tell when I was working on the line, serving the food. We had two lines that everybody walked by, and it's not like it is now, like a restaurant. You went down the two lines, and you got your food, and everybody got the same thing. And then we'd be out there, and the cooks would come out and go, I can always tell when you're working, Donna, because everybody's making noise and laughing. And we'd be, you know, and they had the Hawaiian drums, and so we'd be beating spoons on the pans. It's like, cut it out. And it's like, hey, there's hardly anybody in here anymore. And then Edna, you know Mama Edna. Yeah. Edna was there, and she scared the hell out of all of us, right? She was scary even as a student. We were in the same class, and so she would you know, take the tickets and check off that you had been at that you had eaten and everything. But yeah, Edna was if you could get her away from that job, she was fun. But on the job, she was 99% business. So but anyway, yeah, so, you know, I worked in the kitchen, I'd help put the food together, I washed the tables, I worked in the dorm on the phone, I was a proctor, I was a secretary for some departments, I had worked in the library, pick a number, I was doing it, whatever was necessary, you know, to get that work-study money, and I finally worked off, I think it took me, it was 5 years, that I had to work at a Title I school, that I got my, what's the word for it? Not extinguished, but...
forgiven, the student loan
forgiveness? Yeah, the student loan forgiveness, yeah. I still had, like, maybe 3 or 4 payments we had to make, but, yeah, it was quite the experience. Now, what was the real experience was after we graduated, got married and graduated, and he was in graduate school, and we were driving a Volvo station wagon, a brand new 1970 Volvo station wagon, and living in a shack. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally, it was a shack. It was, you know, it was like the seven plagues of the Bible. You know, there was horse flies and roaches and ants and rats and water coming through the ceiling, just kinds of stuff. So it was a college to young adult life was just all an eye-opening experience for me, that I, like, wow, there's a whole nother life out here that I know nothing about. So, it was a very maturing experience, all of it together. I mean, it's real hard to kind of separate college from early married as in terms of the growth right. that I made. And so, I don't know, anything else you want to ask?
That was
wonderful. I'm so glad you stopped by.
Yes.
How much did you pay for college?
Oh, now that's an interesting question. So the first semester, I think the first year, it was either $1,500 or $2,000.
All right.
And
for the whole year?
For the whole year, yeah. And I think that first semester I had to pay $50, and then the second semester I had to pay, I remember, $150, and I got a lot of financial aid, and I couldn't understand why. My parents owned a mom, pop, and the kids grocery store and a barbershop, and I said, how come I'm getting so much financial aid? And I said, you know, my parents aren't poor. They got money. He said, yeah, but your dad, my dad had just had a massive heart attack when I was a sophomore, 14, and so in high school. Mm-hmm. And so, and I had a younger brother. And so the answer was that your dad's heart's really bad. Mm-hmm. And they hadn't expected him to leave the hospital. So they figured, you know, he might go at any moment. And they didn't want to saddle me with financial expenses that I wasn't going to be able to handle. So as I like to say, I went to college when it was popular to be black. Okay. And got my education, and it was really, I'm really thrilled about that. In terms of affirmative action, all the kids who came here were very intelligent. Mm-hmm. There were some kids that were in the class, I remember in the writing class that we took, that didn't know how to write. In fact, I had asked Dr. Prince, and I'd gone and worried, can I write? Do I need remedial help? Blah, blah, blah. No, you're one of the better writers in the class. Really? Oh, okay.
Right.
Okay, wow. You know, so it was edifying to know that my education, all these years, I'd heard so many negative things about Jefferson High School, that it was edifying to know that I had a good education and a good background. So back to the money issue. Yeah, so the next year it was, you know, I had to bring more money that summer, so I got a summer job.
Okay.
And then brought more money, but every year your share was more.
Okay. Hmm.
So that you had to pay. And then, yeah, it was the same old dance with the FAFSA and the,
yeah,
and all those other things, you know. It's like, I don't know. I do remember there was a Dean Reese who was in charge of the financial aid and such. And I remember I really had a problem with him because he was from the South, first of all, but it was very clear that he was prejudiced. It was just the things that the way that he talked. To me, it was clear that I was not a person, but I was black. Mm-hmm. And then he would call me in, and finally, you know, he'd ask me about all the other black students. And I said, well, you never asked me about any of the white students, do you?
Right.
You know, and he wanted to know what they were doing and this, that, and the other. And I finally realized what he was doing, and I said, you know, you probably should ask them. I don't know that I can help you.
Mm-hmm. Speak for yourself. For everybody.
You know, right. And so it he would call us in, you know, and he'd try and put pressure on people and, you know, and try and I didn't care for him or his tactics. Okay. And my parents had been to college. My dad had been a teacher in the South. He hadn't been able to get a job when he came north. Because I worry about white women, I have to tell you, because, you know, they're so, the white males are so afraid that they're going to be attacked all the time by black men. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is you guys got, but you better protect it, you know? And I'm being facetious, of course. But anyway, yeah, he didn't get hired. They were, this big black buck couldn't get a job teaching because, and I'm like, my dad weighed 175 pounds soaking wet. That was the most he ever weighed, and he was 6 feet tall. So, you know, you're afraid he's going to attack all these little girls. So he got hired, actually, in Portland Public Schools. But when they saw him, he didn't get the job. So he became a barber. Mm-hmm. And then we got the grocery store years later. But, yeah, finances were, you know, working was a big part of it. And I mean, I can see where, for like Brian was saying, that he had to go and get do all these jobs, mm-hmm. how it was for someone who had not worked, that it was quite a shock.
Yeah.
To have to do all these different kinds of jobs and hustle and everything. I'd been doing it since I was 10, so I was like, hey, this is less work than I normally do, so I'm excited to be here. So, yeah, so, you know, you went and got a job during the summer, and you worked during the school year, and you just did what you had to do.
And you worked while you were in school, too?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, every day.
Yeah, I'm at the same part.
Every day, yeah. I mean, you know, there were meals being served. You'll love this story. I worked in the kitchen. So I found out, I think it was about my junior year, I found out that you could do, you could go afterwards and help prepare the meals. And, you know, like fix the salad. They'd have big trays, you know, those big silver things with the tray slit in them. And
oh, the, like the baker's racks.
Yeah. So baker's racks. Well, that's what I'm going to talk about is the baker. So we got this baker, and he was so good. Oh, you know, don't eat it cold. If it was hot, it was great. But once it was cold, it was like kind of a rock. But this guy, he was back there in the kitchen, and he was kind of cross-eyed. This old white guy, and he always had a cigarette hanging out of his mouth, and I never saw, and there was always an ash on it, right? You know, he'd just hold it there, and it'd be ash, it'd be there. I never saw him flick the ash, but it would be gone, and I'd try and, you know, catch it to see. Was it going into the frosting? I never saw anything. The frosting looked pretty good, you know, but I never did see it. But we'd be back there helping with him with the pastries and stuff, and then we'd also be making salads or serving up fruit or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it was constant work. But hey, it was good. It was all good. So I think that's it.
All right. Thank you for your time.
I went to the yearbooks and everything for this event, and I actually saw a couple pictures of you, and I.